This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Safer U.S. roadways. It's long been a good news story with decades of declining numbers of Americans killed in vehicle accidents. But now a new report from the National Safety Council shows that trend reversing with 2 years of major increases in deaths due to car crashes. And among the top states with the largest increase in fatalities, New Hampshire. Today in The Exchange, why Granite State roads are becoming deadlier. Let's hear from you on this. Why do you think this is happening? What do you think the best response would be? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have three guests in studio. Lieutenant Patrick Cheatham is here. He's with the Londonderry Police Department, also Vice President of the New Hampshire Police Association. Lieutenant Cheatham, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good morning.
Also with us, Captain Matthew Shapiro. He's with the New Hampshire State Police, where he's Commander of Highway Safety. And Captain Shapiro, good to see you too. Thank you.
Good morning.
And also with us, Daniel Goodman, Public Affairs Manager for AAA of Northern New England. And Daniel, thanks for your time.
Good morning.
And gentlemen, I want to begin with Deborah Hirschman. She's President of the National Safety Council, which put out that report I just mentioned. She joins us from D.C. Deborah, welcome. Thank you.
Good morning.
Deborah, give us the big picture nationally, please. How much are traffic deaths up? Your report was pretty startling.
Yeah, so what we saw last year is we saw an unprecedented increase, about an 8% increase year over year from the prior year. And this is the largest single year increase in 50 years. And now we're seeing that trend continue for the first 6 months of this year. We're seeing a 9% increase nationwide, but it's even more significant with respect to New Hampshire. We saw New Hampshire fatalities go up 61%.
Wow. So the largest national increase, the single increase in 50 years, Deborah, were you surprised by that?
You know, I think we really were surprised because we had, in fact, seen so many good years. But we know that very often that the economy and highway fatalities are tied. So when we go into a recession, the fatality numbers may come down. When we come out of that recession, the fatality numbers may go up. Couple that with unprecedented low gas prices that we're seeing compared to past years, and we are seeing those numbers go up. But the vehicle miles traveled doesn't completely explain it, because nationwide we saw about a 3% increase in vehicle miles traveled, but an 8% increase in fatalities.
So partly it's because more people are out there, what you call vehicle miles traveled, but that doesn't explain the whole thing.
That's right. And we know when the economy improves that more people are back to work. They're driving to work. They may have more disposable income, so they may take vacations or travel further distances. But again, that 3% increase in vehicle miles traveled, we're seeing a much bigger jump when it comes to the fatality numbers. And so we're looking at three things, really: alcohol-involved crashes, speed, and distraction.
Alcohol, speed, and distraction, those are some of the things that you're pointing to. Which three or four states do you think did the best in terms of improved traffic safety, or at least not jumping onto this larger, more disturbing trend?
You know, I would say that there wasn't really a clear, you know, rationale across the board, because we saw big populous states like California and Florida have big numbers, and then we saw smaller states like Vermont and New Hampshire also have big numbers. The challenge for you all is that your numbers are smaller overall, so any swing with respect to fatalities is going to really kind of show itself. And so we saw 38 fatalities in the six-month period in 2014 for the first 6 months, but we saw 61 fatalities for the first 6 months of this year. And so that's a big jump.
How do you measure traffic deaths, by the way, Deborah? Do you count bicyclists and pedestrians or just people on the road?
Yeah, so anyone who's involved in a fatality that involves a motor vehicle, and the National Safety Council actually counts all of them. We don't just count the fatalities that occur on public roads. We also account for the fatalities that occur on private roads, that could occur in parking lots. And so we do count those numbers. So our numbers are capturing everything. And one of the things that we do know is that pedestrian and bicyclists and motorcyclists were disproportionately affected with respect to the fatality increases. And so those vulnerable road users actually saw even bigger gains.
Wow. Well, you've been widely quoted as saying our complacency is killing us. What especially do you think, Deborah, that we are complacent about?
You know, I think we're just complacent about driving, about getting in our cars and driving. We really take this for granted. It's something we do every day. It's not something that's very discretionary. But I worked for 10 years at the National Transportation Safety Board, and we investigated deaths of transportation in all modes. We kill 100 people a day in motor vehicle crashes on our roadways.
Wow.
That's the equivalent of having two regional jet crashes every day, the equivalent of losing 50 people that come in and out of airports in New Hampshire every day. If that was happening, nobody would set foot on an airplane. But yet we seem to just accept these fatalities on the highways as something that we can't do anything about, but they're all completely preventable.
What about alcohol? You mentioned three problems that you guys are especially looking at: alcohol, speed, and distraction. There have been years and years and years of, you know, designated driver campaigns, and Mothers Against Drunk Driving has been a force for tighter alcohol and driving laws. Why hasn't that been enough?
So I would say if we look back and at the big picture, we do know that those campaigns increasing the drinking age from 18 to 21, the campaigns on drunk driving by Mothers Against Drunk Driving, lowering the blood alcohol level nationwide to 0.08 as the impaired driving limit, all of those things did make a difference. We used to kill about 50,000 people every year in alcohol-involved crashes. Now we kill about 30,000 people every year.
That's a big difference.
We used to kill 50% of all of our highway fatalities were alcohol impaired. Now 30% are alcohol involved. And so what that amounts to is about 10,000 people every year. So so we still see that we're at about 30% with respect to the total numbers on highway fatalities that are involved in alcohol crashes. But That means 10,000 people last year, 10,000 people this year, 10,000 people next year. And so we are being very complacent about this. You can drive from New Hampshire to California and halfway back before you're going to get caught driving impaired. And so people are doing it. What they don't realize is impairment begins with the first drink.
What about speed, Deborah? Give us a little bit more there on how you see that playing into these rising traffic fatalities.
So speed is an issue that we see listed as a factor, and I know you've got a lot of experts in studio with you, so I know they're going to talk to you about their experiences, but nationwide we see speed listed as a factor in about 30% of the crash reports. And so very often speed is involved with something else, and when we look at those vulnerable roadway users like pedestrians, bicyclists, and motorcyclists, every additional 5 miles per hour is going to result in a more catastrophic outcome for them. And so speed is a very important issue, and particularly on rural roads, as we see many states are raising their speed limits. For every increase in speed limits, we see more fatalities, and it's even more significant when you're looking at two-lane roadways that don't have any of those protections, like a divided median or barriers to keep people from having the most deadly head-on collision.
So for every increase in miles per hour, Deborah, you know you're going to see increased fatalities.
That's right. We know that we'll see increases in the severity of the crash, and the likelihood that people will survive diminishes as the speeds go up.
You also mentioned that that's a problem on local roads. So as kids go back to school, they're walking to school, they're riding their bikes. You know, if people are going 40 miles an hour instead of 30 miles an hour, it seems it's going to end badly for the pedestrians and the bicyclists.
Absolutely. That's why we have speed limits in school zones where people need to slow down. You've got a lot of people that are crossing streets, whether they're on foot or cyclists, and even kids getting off and on buses. And so really just thinking about as kids are going back to school, it's a risky time Think about your commute and the way that you drive, and if you can avoid some of those areas that have kids in them, or just give yourself a little bit of extra time so you're not feeling rushed.
Well, one last question for you, Deborah, and thank you again for being with us. What's one action that you wish states would take to address, again, this very disturbing trend in rising traffic fatalities?
Well, you know, since I'm on the phone with you all in New Hampshire, I would be remiss if I didn't say if everyone buckled up. We know that seatbelts save lives. If everyone buckles up, we can save more lives. Nationwide, our seatbelt use rate is about 85%, but the 15% that don't buckle up make up 50% of the fatality numbers.
And really?
We know that states that have primary seatbelt laws actually have greater seatbelt use rate. And so that's one thing that can save lives.
Well, it's good to talk to you, Deborah. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Have a safe day.
That's Deborah Hersman, president of the National Safety Council. Let's hear from you, Exchange listeners, as we look at this trend of rising traffic deaths here and nationwide. 1-800-892-6477. What do you see out there on the roads, whether you're driving, biking, or walking? Why do you think traffic deaths are up nationally after many years of improvement, as we heard, and especially in New Hampshire? Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Captain Shapiro, I want to go to you first because you are, as we said, commander of highway safety with New Hampshire State Police. What's your reaction to what we heard from Deborah?
My reaction is that was an excellent size-up of what's going on both nationally and in New Hampshire. New Hampshire is a small state, so it's really a microcosm of what's going on nationally. We have some specific things that happened this last year, but really what Deborah said was right on. The economy, if you look at the economy over time, you expect that this happens, whereas there's a dip in the economy and a recession, traffic fatalities tend to go down, as do vehicle miles traveled. And when the economy becomes more robust, you expect to see the overall numbers rise. Also, gas prices play a huge effect on what goes on. A few years ago, gas was at $4 a gallon. Now it's at $2 a gallon. And you have more people driving, and you have, and I think to some extent people drive differently when gas is half of what it used to be. So that's something
they
to
drive
consider.
Faster?
Perhaps.
Or longer?
Yeah, yeah. And then specifically, and also, she also made a good point about New Hampshire. New Hampshire is a small state. So percentage-wise, if you had, for example, one fatality and you go to two, tremendous increase.
Big jump, right.
And that's why early in the year you saw such high numbers at 61%. Right now, that is corrected to some extent. It looks like they're up about 37%. And I expect that will go down somewhat by the end of the year, but it's still a tremendous increase.
What do you think explains that discrepancy, Captain Shapiro, that she said? She said, yes, more people are driving. That explains about 3% of that 8% increase. But then there's this whole other rising number that doesn't seem explained by just the fact that people are out there in the roads in bigger numbers.
Well, one thing I think is going to have had an effect here is we had the lightest winter for snowfall, perhaps ever, at least in the top five in recorded history. And that makes a big difference. And the reason why is you see patterns with summer being very busy for crashes, serious
sure.
crashes and fatal crashes. You see spring and fall have a certain pattern and winter has a certain pattern. And usually when we have a high amount of snowfall, that acts as a parachute along the edges of the roadway. The state police take thousands of calls for cars that get pulled out. And essentially, a car gets pulled back out on the road, and there's no damage,
into
and the driver's
snowbank.
Back into a snowbank, and the driver's on the way. But you don't see that in the spring and fall. Like, for example, when you have rainstorms, what happens? A car goes off the road, especially at high speeds, either rolls over, sometimes people are ejected, sometimes you hit a tree or another immovable object, and you have a much more serious crash. And so this winter, we had very little snow, and I would think that that led to more people being on the road and probably more pedestrians. And as Deborah said, we had more pedestrian fatals by a significant amount so far this year.
So the weather was warm, people were out, but it gets dark early in the wintertime, so that's a factor.
That's true as well.
What do you think, Daniel?
Yeah, we are definitely seeing, you know, I want to add to the, she talked about drunk driving, and we're seeing a lot more people impaired driving, which includes marijuana and driving, and over-the-counter medications. We're seeing a huge rise nationally. In that, you know, we have more states legalizing marijuana. We have Maine and Massachusetts on our borders that are considering legalizing it. That's a major issue, as well as drowsy driving is becoming more of a problem. A recent report by the Governor's Highway Safety Association said that maybe 5,000 deaths on our highways were attributed to drowsy driving.
Wow. Just people being too tired. Is that mostly automobiles, do you know, Daniel? Because this has been a big issue in the trucking community, whether truckers are being made to do too many shifts for too long and they get really tired.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of the both. AAA recently did a study on drowsy driving, and almost 1 in 10 drivers said they had fallen asleep in the last year.
Wow.
While they're behind the wheel.
So road conditions, distracted driving, impaired driving. What else do you think is going on, Lieutenant Cheatham? What do you see?
Well, we also have to look at how many new drivers do we have every single year. The age of driving at 16 years old, I see driver's ed classes at the Londonderry High School, and they are packed. So I don't have any data to support that there's an increase in the number of student drivers or young drivers. But one point that you asked or you made with Deborah was, you know, even with all the messaging and the different advocacy groups out there, you know, why are we still having all these crashes? And I think that I hesitate to use the word complacency when driving, but all of us, when you've been driving for so many years, I think it's important that we all continue to see those messages and hear them. And I'd like to compliment Captain Shapiro and the State Police and also the New Hampshire DOT. I think the electronic messaging boards are excellent. It's a good reminder, and some of those just short messages, even as you're driving up the highway, you can't help but read them. And whether you take them to heart or not, I think we all keep those in the back of our minds as we see them. And also just the data that they share, you know, crash ahead, expect delays. Getting information out there, I think, does prepare drivers as we're going and does reduce crashes. That's my personal opinion. It's my professional opinion. And I think we need to continue with that messaging and keep people always cognizant and remind them of the dangers of driving a motor vehicle.
Now, some of those messages have to do with New Hampshire's new hands-free law that you're not supposed to use a mobile device unless you're in hands-free mode. So in other words, no texting, no looking at Facebook, no checking Instagram while you're driving. How effective has this law been?
I think it's been extremely effective because we live in a media dominant world now, don't we? I mean, it still blows my mind that my iPhone, you can do FaceTime and you can do real-time video and all these other things where just 10 years ago, cell phones did a fraction of what
it was for talking. That was about it.
And this is a way of life, and we have to adapt and change. And I think distracted driving was a consequence of an increased technological world. And of course, now with vehicles being as complicated as they are, as advanced as they are, my wife and I just purchased a new SUV, and I'll tell you, I had to pull over on the side of the road because I was confused as I was just trying to drive it. And I said, all right, I need to pull over. And I wasn't talking on the phone or using my phone at all. It was just cars are so complicated today, absent even just talking on the telephone. And we need to, we need to catch up and make sure, with training and, being aware of your surroundings at all times.
So you think this law has made a difference?
I think it has. I mean, I work a lot of traffic details, and you see people still driving by talking on the telephone. But I know police departments across the state, state police, we had special enforcement details to make sure that we were informing drivers of the change of the law. And many drivers from out of state don't always remember that we have a hands-free law here in New Hampshire. And not that everyone's getting a ticket. Our enforcement efforts were, pulling over a lot of vehicles and making sure people knew, handing them just some informational. I think there were pamphlets saying, hey, we do have distracted driving law now. So please make sure you put that telephone down. It could save your life. It could save someone else's life. Take the time to make that call later.
Well, coming up, I'll ask our other guests how effective they think this law has been. Still a lot of people out there looking at their phones while they drive down the road. And we'll hear from you. So give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, rising traffic deaths here and nationwide. As we're hearing, after decades of improved safety on our roadways, the trend is reversing with major increases in fatalities around the country and in New Hampshire. Let's hear from you. What do you see out there on the roads, whether you're driving on the highway or in town or biking or walking? Why do you think these deaths are up nationally and in the Granite State? 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have three guests in studio. Lieutenant Patrick Cheatham is here with the Londonderry Police Department, Vice President of the New Hampshire Police Association, Daniel Goodman, Public Affairs Manager for AAA of Northern New England, and Captain Matthew Shapiro. He's with the New Hampshire State Police, where he's Commander of Highway Safety. And Captain Shapiro, I'd like to hear from you, too. How effective has this hands-free law been?
Well, I'd like to also say that Deborah had a nice size up with regard to the driving behaviors that cause most of these crashes. The vast majority, probably 75% of them, are caused by driving under the influence of alcohol or drugs more and more, especially since New Hampshire's in the middle of an opiate epidemic, which really started 15 years ago as a prescription drug epidemic and then moved to a heroin epidemic and then a fentanyl epidemic and now another synthetic drug epidemic. These are all things that affect driving when people are driving impaired, obviously, by drugs. That's a major factor. She was correct. Here, it's 30 to 40% of all these fatal crashes are caused by impaired driving. So that's at the very top of things that we need to address with driving behaviors. But not too far behind that are exactly what she said, distracted driving and speed. She said 30%. It probably is some years. 30, 25, 30% have to do with distracted driving and or speed. And I think you have to look at the distracted driving law as a cultural change. When you look back at the drunk driving laws, it was very different in the 1970s and early 1980s. And it took a very long time for society to accept that this was not appropriate behavior and that we all had to agree to go a different way. And that's where that tremendous change came from that she referred to nationally with regard to the enforcement of drunk driving laws and the messaging of drunk driving laws and MADS messaging. And that took place over 3 decades.
So it takes time.
It takes time. It takes time. And this is something that almost everyone was engaged in 2 or 3 years ago. If you think back to as bad as it is right now, and there's plenty of this to be had if you're in law enforcement, as bad as it is right now, 2 or 3 years ago, this was every 6 or 7 or 8 cars, every intersection, every country road, every car you pass by on the highway. And today we have an enforceable law. It's messaged. And it's something that people are understanding.
You're talking about the hands-free?
The hands-free law is something that people understand is dangerous behavior. Whether or not they've changed to go to hands-free or not, some people haven't. But I will just say this. The Department of Safety has stopped about 6,000 drivers for this. But you have to keep in mind, we have probably stopped 60,000 drivers for speeding and significant speeding. So it is certainly out there. It's something that needs to be enforced, but it's going to be an ongoing change that we're going through. And I think it will become better over time as people buy new cars, as they assimilate to technology that's not very difficult or expensive to get, and as new drivers come on board where this is just the way that they learned, that this will not be appropriate driving behavior. You should be paying attention and not looking at electronic devices.
Well, here's an email from Karen who says, the hands-free statute, in my opinion, has failed. Every day you see people texting, talking on their phones, doing anything but driving. It does not matter what road they are on, the highway, the local roads. Karen says there should be more of a crackdown on it with harsh penalties for first-time offenders. Send a message. Karen, thank you. And I don't know about other towns, but Daniel, here in Concord, I can't tell you how many times I've seen people staring at their laps or staring at, you know, their phones while they're driving at the same time.
Yeah, I agree. I think wherever you go, Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, any other state, when you're driving, you're seeing it. And it's a big, big concern in this state and nationally. I mean, I want to commend Captain Shapiro, the state of New Hampshire, and local law enforcement for the enforcement of this law and for enacting this law. I mean, I think drivers, our listeners, need to remember that when you're behind the wheel, your primary responsibility is to drive a car. You know, our AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety recently did a study, and it showed that after you hang up your phone, whether it's your hands-free device or Bluetooth device, your infotainment system through your car, that there's a residual distraction that it can last up to 27 seconds after you hang up your phone that you're still distracted.
Mental distraction.
Right, that cognitive distraction, that there's a strong mental cognitive distraction when you use your phone, even when you hang up. So it's, you know, I think we all need to remember that maybe hands-free isn't always risk-free.
So what's the suggestion? Throw the phone in the trunk?
Yeah, you know, put the phone in the trunk. Give it to your passenger. You know, put it in the glove compartment. We went so many years without using these in our cars, I think we can do it again.
Let's take some calls, all of you. We've got tons of people who want to jump in, and I've got a stack of emails and Facebook comments here as well. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook. Send us a tweet. And let's go first to Alexis in Chesterfield. Hi, Alexis. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Go ahead, Alexis.
I live in Chesterfield, New Hampshire, which is right in between Keene and Brattleboro, Vermont. And they recently installed rumble strips on the sides of the road and center of the road, trying to prevent accidents. And a lot of people have been hitting these rumble strips, probably distracted driving, and it has caused a lot of people in the town to complain, and now the state is paying to fill the rumble strips back in.
So what do you think about that, Alexis?
I can't hear it from my house, but I still think it's kind of ridiculous, especially just because every time you hear that, you just know that that's someone who is being reminded to stay on the road. It's not them trying to annoy you.
Yeah. So you think they should keep them or fill them in?
Oh, I think they should keep them.
Okay. Yeah. And I'd love to hear from you on this, Captain Shapiro. The rumble strips, I've heard that they really help with safety.
Yes. From our perspective, we look at a multifaceted approach. Of course, we look at strong laws. We've talked about some of those. We look at messaging. We talked about that. High visibility enforcement. We talked about that. But one thing she's referring to is roadway countermeasures, and DOT has been a super good partner to the Department of Safety and local and county agencies with regard to this. You just take a look at the first, to my knowledge, the first centerline rumble strips that went in was on a piece of road called Death Alley, which was a 202 and 9 in Henniker, Hoppington, and into Hillsborough.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Where there was a tremendous rate of fatal crashes.
Right.
And it took a little while to find the proper depth, not to have too much noise, but enough to remind a driver whether they be impaired or looking at their phone or falling asleep. But that caller is correct. Every time I drive down that road and I hear zzz, it reminds you that that might have just saved a life. And the rate of fatal crashes on that road went down by 50%.
That's a lot.
50%. And that's an extremely inexpensive countermeasure to put in. Because we see all kinds of countermeasures they'd helped us with. There's a barrier down 93 in Concord that wasn't there 10 years ago. There's barrier from exit 5 down to exit 2 on Interstate 89 that wasn't there. The eastern half of 101 now has barrier all the way out, going out that way. On 93 in Manchester, there's cable guardrail that there wasn't previously there. DOT's been putting in roundabouts and centerline rumble strips on state roadways with high posted speed limits, not just 202 and 9. Route 16 in places and many other roads around the state because it's proven to be an effective countermeasure.
What do you think about this, Lieutenant Cheatham, the simple technology of putting in rumble strips to kind of wake people up or make them realize that they're going off the road, and this effort in Chesterfield that Alexis tells us about to get rid of them?
And I hear her loud and clear because there is that nuisance, so to speak, if you live right there. But we have so many roadways in New Hampshire where the speeds are in excess of 50, 55 miles an hour and on an undivided highway. And I agree with Captain Shapiro. These are a low-cost but highly effective measure to reduce serious and fatal car crashes.
Let's take another call. Thank you, Alexis, for that one. To Josh in Plymouth. Hi, Josh. You're on the exchange. Welcome.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Great show. Yeah, I just said two quick comments. Just that call you had in the beginning that mentioned the three factors, speed, alcohol, and distraction. It seems to me that speed and alcohol have probably been around since cars have been on the road. So I really feel like cell phones are a big factor now. And the other thing is I was just wondering if your guests think that cell phone companies have any responsibility in, you know, putting out non-distracted driving campaigns on their own.
You know, Josh, this is a great question. What do you think, Daniel? I'll turn to you.
Yeah, there's no shortage of public service announcements, commercials, marketing efforts by insurance companies and phone companies and such great organizations all over the country that are promoting distracted driving. But, you know, I think it really comes down to the user, to the driver itself. You know, we all say do – it's kind of like this do as I say, not as I do. We all know that distracted driving is a problem. We all know that we shouldn't text and drive, but it still happens. People still do it. I can do it. And I think, you know, it was mentioned earlier, teen drivers. You know, for parents out there, it's really important to when you're driving with your teen, you know, practice what you preach. Do you want your teen talking on the phone? Do you want your teen
texting. So remember that they're paying attention to you as well.
Well, could there be some sort of a, I don't know, technology that would disable the phone once you get in the car? Like it senses that the car is moving and so it just doesn't go on?
I think they're working on some technology out there.
And some smart person would disable that disabling technology. But go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm really not sure what sort of technology there is out there. But, you know, we talked about countermeasures that the Department of Transportation are taking. You know, our vehicles are improving safety as well. You know, for years we developed countermeasures in our cars to prevent us getting killed in a car. Seat belts, you know, head restraints, airbags. Now that we have crazy technology now in cars that, you know, emergency braking, lane departure systems that are helping prevent car crashes. So, you know, there are things that are working in our favor.
So the design of cars has been getting safer and safer and safer. But then you have this new element of technology that grabs your eyeballs away from the road.
Exactly.
Let's take another call. And Cheryl is in Hudson. Hi, Cheryl. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
A wonderful, interesting, needed topic. This past Friday, I was in an accident, and I was in town going 30 miles an hour. I was moving when I was rear-ended by someone who was distracted driving. I don't know what to say except that people need to understand that way back when, in my 60s, my father told me when I got a car, remember, he was a car dealer, and he said, remember, you're driving 2,000 pounds of killer if you don't use it properly.
So, Cheryl, what do you think the action should be by local communities or by the state to take care of this? Given your experience,
I have one. I have two suggestions.
All right.
There is a book out there called A Deadly Wandering. I don't know if you've ever heard about it. It is a story that I think every young person learning to drive should be made to read before they get a license. I've made my two sons read it, and I've given it to other people. It's about a young man who killed three people with distracted driving. And the science of it, you know, it's a science of the attention in the digital age. The other thing is, I think people should be able to buy a car without distractions in it, but try to do that. In other words, what if I want a car that simply has a steering wheel, a regular radio, and that's it? You can't do that. So the auto industry, I think, has a responsibility in this because they're keeping us addicted to technology, and now they've brought it into the car, and it's not necessary.
Well, Cheryl, thanks for calling. And here's another email on the issue of speed, a couple emails on this. Here's Jackie in Dover, who says, as someone who's lived in New England for 6 years and a recent transplant to New Hampshire, Jackie says, I am officially considering swearing off driving altogether. I feel unsafe while driving because on any highway with a speed limit under 70 miles an hour, cars consistently go at least 70 miles an hour, even if the speed limit is 50 miles an hour in a construction zone. Especially with the increase in tourism, there have been countless times that out-of-state cars would be going the speed limit and nearly cause accidents because cars with local plates are speeding by, weaving in and out of lanes. There are many roads that I think would actually be safer if the speed limit were raised so that tourists and visitors would feel comfortable legally driving what is already the speed of the flow of traffic. I've got another one on speed limits, too, but I want to hear from you on this, Lieutenant Cheatham. There's a lot of debate about, you know, why not just have the speed limit reflect the actual rate at which people are driving? Why not lower them so that people will perceive the actual rate at lower speeds? I just wonder what you think.
Well, I don't have any statistics to support changing the speed on our highways, but my understanding is that, I mean, there's engineering studies, there are safety studies, and there's a tremendous amount of time, effort, and research that goes into setting speed limits on not only local roads, but on our state highways. So I don't want to give misinformation and suggest that we should, you know, seriously alter and affect the speeds on highways, and I would defer to Captain Shapiro because I'm willing to bet that he has much more data and experience and maybe somehow some of these speed limits are set. But, you know, I think common sense and good judgment whenever we're driving, in anywhere we are in our personal lives, and do take driving seriously, and just be reminded that it's a 4,000-pound weapon, and we all need to exercise good judgment and be aware of our surroundings and just slow down. And I've been driving for roughly 20 years, but I remember some statistics from Mr. Griffin, my driver's ed instructor at Trinity High School, and if you increase your speed by 10 or 15 miles an hour, you're saving yourself, in the end, 45 seconds or a minute and a half to maybe your drive. But you're significantly increasing your dangers of hurting yourself, hurting someone, hurting yourself or someone else. And the cost benefits analysis is just not there.
The 5 minutes or the 2 minutes that it saves you. Well, Deborah Hirschman with the National Safety Council at the beginning of the show told us that when you raise speed limits, you automatically know that more people will die. Here's a Facebook comment from Roxanne, who says 35 miles per hour on twisting back roads translates to 50 miles per hour in real life. Insane, says Roxanne. What do you see on the town roads in Londonderry?
Well, we take citizen complaints very seriously. Oftentimes, we will increase radar enforcement or traffic enforcement in a certain area. And recently, just this year, we purchased, I believe, 3 or 4 portable radar signs, basically. And what they do is we can attach them to a telephone pole or attach them to a speed limit sign. So to try and reinforce, this is the speed limit and this is your speed.
Oh, the ones that flash at you and say, speed limit 30, you're going 35.
Correct. And not only that, we recently also purchased a mobile messaging board that we can, right now it's parked right in front of our police station. And our message this week is, school's back in session, watch for students. Because on Mammoth Road in Londonderry, we have 3 schools with over nearly 1,000 students. The high school, I believe, has close to 2,000 students. The middle school has well over 1,200. And then one of our elementary schools also. And every one of those schools is in a section of Mammoth Road. And we have crossing guards. We have school resource officers. And we're making sure that we're out there, have the blue lights on. Please slow down and remind people, school's back in session. Kids are crossing the street. Slow down.
Middle school and the high school are on a busy road. I've been there. And there's a good sidewalk, but still.
Hundreds of cars in the morning. Yeah. And I always have to try and come a different way to the station because you'll be stuck there because there are so many cars, there are so many students. And we want to make sure that they're getting to school safely as well as people are able to get to work, efficiently and safely for them as well.
Well, here's a comment from Deborah on Facebook on this as well about speed. She says, saw this one coming when speed limits were raised. Tailgating, passing on double lines on the right. No one cares about any of the suggested speeds. Captain Shapiro, the state raised the speed limit to 70 miles an hour on I-93 north of Canterbury a couple years ago, maybe even just a year ago. How's that working out?
Well, I don't think it's early enough to know. I think DOT at the time that went to the legislature talked about looking at a study over the course of 3 years to see if it increased the number of crashes or how serious the crashes were in that area. And I think it's more complicated than just that. And one thing Deborah talked about is seatbelt use. Obviously, there's very few crashes that occur that are of serious injury or fatality in, for example, a parking lot. The faster you go, the more likely it is you are to be injured, especially if you're not wearing your seatbelt.
Coming up, a lot more of your comments. Stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, rising traffic deaths here and nationwide. After many, many years of improved safety on our roadways, the trend is now reversing. We're looking at why, and we want to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, 1-800-892-6477. And Daniel, with AAA, I did want to bring you in on this as well. We talked a lot just before the break about speed. New Hampshire raised the speed limit to 70 on I-93 north of Canterbury recently. Did AAA take a position on that?
We did not. No. But I agree with everything that's been said that, if the speed limit is 70, you're probably going to be driving probably over that. That's what we're seeing across the state and in Maine and as well. I just want to jump on what Lieutenant Cheatham said, and I'm really happy that he brought up that school's starting and then there's more kids walking around, biking, getting off to school. But as well as we have a lot of new teen drivers now driving to school, and teen drivers are probably the most at risk
drivers to be getting in car crashes. So remember that we got a lot more teen drivers on the road.
Here's one from Christopher in Manchester, an email who says, I've noticed over the past few years, a lot of car commercials focus mostly on interactive technology, screens and Wi-Fi, not styling or performance. Christopher says, I find this irresponsible and only contributes to the problem you're discussing. Daniel, you touched on this before, but I'd love to hear what you think about Christopher's note.
Yeah, it's a great point. The cars are becoming – we know that using a cell phone, using those infotainment systems is a huge, huge distraction. But the car manufacturers are going to design cars the way we want them. And consumers want to go on Facebook. They want to tweet. They want to interact with email and all that stuff while they're driving. But we need to understand that that's not what we should be doing when we're driving a 4,000-pound machine.
So with AAA, I mean, you guys are a major organization. Everybody knows who you are. You have a strong voice in New Hampshire, New England, and nationally. What do you folks say about that?
Yeah, you know, we work with agencies like Captain Shapiro and local law enforcement agencies and state agencies to help educate the public that distracted driving is a huge problem and that you should put away your phone while you're driving.
I mean, in terms of the car companies putting all this technology in cars so that people can, you know, I don't know, look up the weather and tweet and check Facebook while they're driving, you know, 50 miles an hour.
AAA works a lot with the car companies and the manufacturers of these infotainment systems and these Bluetooth companies to try to educate them. When we come up with this research from the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety, one of the big goals of that is to present that to the major industries to say, hey, this is what's happening when these users are using this stuff. And hopefully that down the line, it will change. It will get better.
All right. Christopher, thank you for the email. Do you want to jump in too? Yeah.
I do. I just want to remind you and the callers that are calling in, the listeners, that these aren't standalone issues, these driving behaviors. When you see serious and fatal crashes, it's not often that you just have somebody who was distracted. It's somebody who's distracted and speeding and wasn't wearing their seatbelt. And they're not standalone issues. And the faster you're driving, the less reaction time you have, whether you're impaired and your reactions are slower than they should be, or whether or not you're distracted. And, of course, the best countermeasure of all is wearing your seatbelt. And oftentimes in the most serious crashes, you see more than one of these come into play, and sometimes all of them.
So if you're distracted but you're wearing your seatbelt, you make a mistake, you might survive. If you're distracted, you're not wearing your seatbelt, you might not survive.
This is not just my perception. It's not just me anecdotally, but state police in general, I would say local law enforcement or anyone who works in law enforcement has been to crashes that you look at the car and cannot believe that somebody has crawled out of this car virtually uninjured because they were seatbelted. New Hampshire has a very low rate of seatbelt use. It's about 70%, and that's based off voluntary compliance for adults. And as Deborah said earlier, other states like Connecticut has 85% with a primary law. When you go out west, it's 95% or so in California. And so in New Hampshire, that translates to about 60 or 70% of the fatal crashes we see every year has someone that's not seatbelted. And that's because they are wind up hitting an immovable object either in the vehicle or they're ejected from the vehicle. And those are largely survivable and would be perhaps even minimally injured.
Go ahead, Lieutenant Cheatham.
One other topic that we haven't hit on today, which I think is also extremely important from my perspective as a police officer, is the move over law. And I'd like to just commend the drivers in the state of New Hampshire, where I've seen so many times, even on my drive from Merrimack today, I passed probably three or four troopers either on the side of the road or in a construction zone. And how many drivers are taking that very seriously? Last year or maybe 2 years ago, there were more than 25 troopers that were struck on the highway, not in just inclement weather, because distracted driving or because people didn't take seriously that they need to slow down when they see those blue lights, when they see those red lights. In conversations I've had with Colonel Quinn and other troopers and members of his staff, I mean, that affects all of us here in New Hampshire when you have, I mean, more than 25 cruisers were disabled. Let's not even forget about the injuries to those troopers and to those police officers. Fortunately, we didn't have a law enforcement fatality as a result of one of those collisions, but many of those officers were seriously hurt and were out for extended periods of time or unable to come back to work. And it was down in Massachusetts. A trooper was killed by someone who was struck at early morning hours. So I just wanted to quickly hit upon that point where, again, education, enforcement, enforcement and messaging. And it seems to me, at least from my perspective, as I drive the state's highways and state's roadways, thank you very much for slowing down and moving over when you see those emergency vehicles on the side of the road.
Okay. Yeah, that's it. Again, thank you again. This is getting a pattern that everything Lieutenant Cheatham says, I like to commend him. That's a huge, huge issue in New Hampshire, not just with police officers, but DOT workers and tow truck drivers and EMS workers. And that's attributed to, you know, those car crashes are drivers who are distracted, speeding, alcohol, drugs, drowsy. And Captain Shapiro's agency, AAA, the New Hampshire Towing Association, and Concord EMS and Concord PD recently put together a public service announcement on the slow down, move over law. It's a really great PSA. It's airing on local TV. And I just wanted to thank the partnering agencies.
Let's take another call. This is Cody in Dover. Hi, Cody. Go ahead. You're in the exchange. Thanks for being with us.
Hey there. Yeah, I just wanted to touch on, you know, as technology comes more into our lives, there's going to be new issues that need to be discussed like this. So I just want to thank you for bringing up this topic. That being said, there are initiatives by the technology companies. For example, Motorola has an app called Moto Assist, and it will actually detect when you're moving over a certain speed. And from there, it will take all of your texts, read them to you. It will silence any calls immediately. So there is apps out there that can assist people. Obviously, it really comes down to people taking the initiative to, you know, put the phone down. But as much as technology helps us, there's ways that it can assist as well.
I see.
Especially with this issue.
Technology, Cody, helping us from ourselves, you know, resist the temptation to pick up the phone and text. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. So there are ways to do it safely. And I think as the technology and the apps that allow this to be safer, you know, mature, I think people will adapt to that as well.
Okay.
But it's definitely important to have this conversation.
Cody, thank you for calling in. What do you think, Daniel?
Yeah, Cody's exactly right. There are a lot of apps out there that are voluntary, from Motorola to all sorts of small companies. I just met with a guy from Middlebury College, a student at Middlebury College, who came up with his own app. But it's voluntary. It will shut off your phone or send a message to people who are calling you or sending you a text that I'm driving. You know, please leave me alone. I'll call you when I stop. So, you know, people are making the effort, but that driver has to make the decision that I don't want to text and drive. But so there are some great technology out there.
Let's take another one. This is Nicholas, also in Dover. Hi, Nicholas. Go ahead. You're in the exchange. Welcome.
Hi. I have a thought, I guess, that ties into this conversation. In regards to signs reminding us not to text and other traffic information, you know, we go through driver's ed when we're teenagers and we get our licenses, and we never really have any refresher after that, even just on basic driving etiquette. And you see this clearly with people's loose interpretation of right away. So maybe a simple solution to this would be, and you see this in Europe, would be to have more signs at difficult intersections or maybe complicated traffic patterns that just sort of simply point out to motorists how they're supposed to approach or go through an intersection, or even just basic driving etiquette sort of refreshers. And I think that could maybe just be a simple way to remind people.
That everybody has to do when they get their license renewed, Nicholas? Is that what you're saying? Or
No. Because we don't actually have to take a refresher sort of driver's ed course
right. When
we get after we've been driving for 30, 40 years. This would just be a simple way to remind people of even just basic driving etiquette that could really help people to become better drivers. A sign, you know, on the side of the road that maybe just reminds people of, like I said, simple right of way.
Sure.
Or how to approach a complicated intersection or something like that.
Well, Nicholas, thank you for calling in. And boy, lots of comments today, gentlemen. Here's a couple more. Here's an email from Roger in Concord, who says, as a motorcyclist, I am hypervigilant, always trying to anticipate the carelessness or recklessness of those driving around me. The distracted driver is often easily identified by drifting, speed irregularities, sudden moves out of the flow of traffic, and there's never a problem finding them. Richard says, the grace period for violations of hands-free needs to be over. Give tickets when this is illegal, when this illegal and dangerous behavior is observed. Your guest stated that warnings are still being issued. Why? He says, I can sit on the sidewalk too in downtown Concord and spot hands-free violations as motorists drive through the city's network of crosswalks, putting pedestrians at risk. People are aware of the law, he says, but choosing to ignore it. Wow. I think I'll turn to you first, Lieutenant Cheatham. He says, look, you know, stop issuing warnings. Get serious about this.
I hear Roger loud and clear, but I've been 14 years in law enforcement. It's been my experience that sometimes and oftentimes a warning can be just as effective as a citation. I'm not saying that's always the case, but as police officers, we really try and weigh in our decision-making the necessity of writing a citation or not. And I hear Roger and others loud and clear, but again, just from my perspective as having stopped, you know, hundreds if not thousands of cars in my career, oftentimes a warning can be as effective as a citation, but and perhaps you know, we do need to increase the issuance of citations, especially on this matter, as we continue to change our driving behavior. And like Captain Shapiro said, this is something that will take time because it is a culture shift from our perspective as not only drivers but as police officers.
Captain Shapiro, I'm glad we heard from a motorcyclist. So thank you, Roger, because I think that's one bright spot in recent numbers, right, that motorcycle deaths are actually down.
That is correct. They were lower this year. But I would like to take his point and the point that you made and others about distracted driving and say, this is an example of what I was talking about a cultural shift. It has become unacceptable to a number of people. They really are enraged when they see other people doing this. A
couple of our emails and callers, yeah.
Several years ago, this was absolutely common practice. People in general probably perceived this was not a good idea, but everybody did it. It was acceptable driving behavior. And once we all agreed and the law was changed, you have people that have lined up and said, it's not acceptable behavior. And I don't like it when other people do it. And I have people come up to me and say, not every day, but often, very often, say exactly what you said to me this morning, which is, I see this. I was driving up here from Manchester. Where were you? You should have seen this person. They were looking at their phone. They were watching a video. And if you think about it, that has become an event. Before, nobody said anything about it. It was literally happening within every 10 cars. And it's changing in safety services for the police, for fire, for EMS, for record drivers. Companies don't want their employees doing this on company time because they know it's dangerous. And in general, the general driving public, their attitude is changing towards this as well.
You're seeing that cultural shift then?
Absolutely, because I hear the same comments from a number of people saying, why don't you do something about this? Continue to message it. Why aren't you enforcing it? Why aren't you writing more tickets? Why has there been so much leniency towards this? Well, we did a year-long public education program. A year. I can't think of anything in the history of the state of New Hampshire where you have taken that much time to ease into a legislative change. And on top of that, enforcement, as it started off in July about a year ago, was a lot more weighted towards giving warnings about the law. And I think to some extent, that person that emailed in is correct. There comes a point where you have to say, if you know about this, now you've had a year or a year and a half, 2 years, you either made a change or you didn't, because it's about being prepared for the time that you have to receive a text or you have to receive a call for work or somebody has to tell you they're going to be late and all those excuses that you hear. It's not about that it happened today. It's about why didn't you do something in the last 2 years to be ready for today?
Let's take one more call, and this is Gloria in Peterborough. Go ahead, Gloria. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, thank you. This is very topical. I had a very positive peer pressure experience when I was driving through Nashua on 101A in the spring, where I was stopped at a light. I picked up my phone, and I quickly heard a beep-beep from the car next to me This guy looking out his window is pointing two fingers to his eyes, then two fingers to the road. And my initial reaction was to be kind of angry because here I am. I'm stopped at a light.
And who are you to tell me what to do, right?
Yeah. And then I realized, you know what? He's right. And I gave him the okay sign and I put my phone down and it was a lesson learned. And I thought it was actually quite great for me and for other people.
Well, Gloria, not everybody would have that reaction. Some people maybe, but I'm thinking, Daniel, some people might not want other drivers telling them what to do. There's also a generational thing here, too.
Yeah, I want to warn drivers against beeping at other cars and other vehicles. You know, you don't know how someone else is going to react, road rage. You know, we have some aggressive drivers out there. But, you're exactly right with teen drivers. I'm around a lot of teen drivers, and I think we're seeing a major cultural shift with them. When I speak with them, a lot of them do see that they're never going to – they do see that – It's a bad decision to get behind the wheel while using their phone.
You think they see that? I think they think they're invincible and nothing's going to happen to them and they're smarter than everybody else.
I think that was us.
Well, here's an email that I'll close out with. I won't read the whole thing, Sean, but this is Sean in Holderness who says, a car accident is one of the most violent ways of driving. He says, drivers, please be smart and enjoy life. Sean, thank you so much for that email. And all of you, thank you very much for being here. Daniel Goodman, good to see you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Daniel Goodman, Public Affairs Manager for AAA of Northern New England. Captain Shapiro, thank you for taking time out.
You're welcome.
Captain Shapiro, he's with the New Hampshire State Police. He's Commander of Highway Safety. And Lieutenant Cheatham, thank you for your time as well.
You're welcome. Nice to be back.
Lieutenant Pat Cheatham with the Londonderry Police, also Vice President of the New Hampshire Police Association. Remember, our conversation always continues online on Facebook and at nhpr.org. This is The Exchange on NHPR.